Very good morning, everybody. Sorry, afternoon now, I suppose. Is everybody well today? Yes? Are you all enjoying TechEd? Did you enjoy the country drinks last night? Okay, a little bit of time to get over. Okay, so I assume that you've all picked up one of my bookmarks. If you haven't, then you can always still run up. There will be a little competition later on, and you can win a copy. Did I mention I've written a new book, by the way? I have written a new book, and you can win a signed copy of that book if you can answer but one question. What is the name of the main character? And I'm going to pick somebody from a random section. Okay, so somebody from a particular section. So, first of all, a very good afternoon. Welcome along to my very last session at TechEd ever. Okay, because there will be no more TechEd. And that little video that I showed you, that I made a couple of nostalgia videos. I actually posted them last night. If you go to my Twitter account, Andy Malone, they've been posted up there on YouTube, and the links and things are there for that. So 20 years since Windows 95. Can you believe that? Wow. Where has the time gone? That is incredible, isn't it? So, first of all, as I say, a good afternoon. For those of you who I've not met before, my name is Andy Malone. I'm an MVP, like Paula and Marcus, in enterprise security, and have been now for about 8 years. I specialize in cybersecurity, more the people side of it. The people side is more my kind of interest, and I also kind of dabble in forensics as well. So this particular session is all about the Tor network. Now, before we get into the way, let me just do a little advertising. I have written a new book. It's called The Seventh Day. Hey, if Mark Rasinovich can get away with it, then so can I, okay? Okay. It's a sci-fi thriller. Think Highlander meets Angels and Demons, but with volcanoes, okay? That's essentially what it is. Okay, with lots of twists and turns. So you can, it's available everywhere, ebook, whatever, okay? And as I say, you can possibly win a copy here today a little bit later on. So what are we going to talk about today? Well, first of all, the dark web. Is the dark web really all that bad anyway? So it started out as a really good idea, actually. But somewhere along the lines, it's got a little bit twisted. So we're going to talk about what the Tor network is and basically how does it keep you anonymous. So we're going to kind of dig into that. We'll also talk about who uses Tor and why do they use it. So it's not just necessarily bad guys, of course. Understand exactly what I mean by the dark web. So, and you're probably thinking, well, that probably, Andy, just means anything that Google can't see. Okay, which is probably not a lot, really. Actually, you'd be surprised. There are millions of web pages. If they are not indexed, they are essentially classed as the dark web. We'll talk about potential flaws in the technology as well. So, again, there's been a lot of research in this area. Governments around the world are putting millions of dollars into finding potential flaws in the technology. And the actual creators of the Tor network, they've been offered money, they've been offered jewels and diamonds, and probably their own countries as well along the line if they'll give up the secrets. But so far, they've never given up the secret yet. We'll also talk about it from the forensics and the law enforcement perspective as well. But also, many of you probably work for companies. You probably work for maybe education establishments. I've done a lot of work with schools and education, and the thought of kids being able to surf the Tor web really actually fills me with dread because it's really quite dangerous. Some of the content out there is quite dangerous, and hence the reason this presentation has that little government health warning at the beginning. Anything, by the way, that you do browse on the dark web, be extremely careful. You could end up in jail because of it, and also you could end up with some nasty viruses on your systems. So we'll talk about, finally, the Tor technology and how it actually affects your business. So first of all, we could actually say, I suppose, that Tor really is a tale of two sides. So it was originally designed to bring voice to freedom. So in many countries around the world, the internet is restricted or curtailed. Many websites are censored. So if I was a refugee and I wanted to get my voice out, then often this was the only way to get out there. So it was actually created with very, very good intent. But somewhere, unfortunately, along the line, it's actually been twisted. And it's now become, a dark place where bad people lurk. So it's full of things like people trafficking, sex slavery, paedophiles, and so on. Some really quite nasty people. So obviously the first thing I want to talk about is what it originally was designed for. So it's designed originally to bring voice, a voice, to the potentially suppressed in the world. It was originally designed to be an open source, in fact it is an open source project, so nobody actually owns it. And it's actually run by a very, very small group of volunteers. So why use it? Well, first of all, freedom, as I said, from potential oppression. Freedom from having communications monitored or curtailed. Andy, does that mean I can download free movies and nobody will find me? Unfortunately not. Okay, so one of the big rules I will say right now is don't torrent under Tor. Because although the actual Tor environment is really quite secure, it's the applications running underneath that would probably give you away. Okay? So torrent traffic is still torrent traffic. It's used by government embassies for sending of confidential emails or a variant of this technology. And it's also very useful in accessing blocked websites. So, for example, the one on screen there is the BBC website. So how am I going to watch my favourite Top Gear show or my favourite Doctor Who episode? Other than downloading it, the other option is I can obviously either go through Tor or I can go through an anonymous proxy. So what are the different Tor projects out there? Is it just the Tor project? Well, no, actually, there's quite a few of the different projects. There's actually, this is quite an interesting one. So if you don't want any kind of residue on your laptop, what you can do is there is a bootable. It's a Linux distro, and essentially it's called Tails. So you can boot your laptop up, and it will boot into a Linux distro, and then you can run Tor in there. There's also the Tor browser, which I'm going to talk about today. There's Tor Atlas. So again, it gives you a complete kind of a map, I suppose, of all the various exit nodes in the world, which is quite useful. STEM is really quite a very, very powerful development environment. So if you want to develop applications, if you do want to develop technologies that use this, then that's something that you should look at. Of course, Android also has its own kind of version of this as well, and this Orbot is actually being developed to run on other platforms as well, so not just Android. There's also a shell, and of course there's various transports, and there's also the latest thing is the new Tor Cloud, which helps bridge various networks. So in all, there's a number of different projects. And of course, the Tor network is just one example of that. There are, of course, many other, I suppose, what we call variants of the Tor network out there. So garlic routing, anonymous P2P, and some of these, and so on. So it's not, when I talk about the dark web or anonymous networks, it's not really just about the Tor network, although they kind of did get the things going. So where did it begin? Well, it began, as I said, in good faith as an open source project. It's actually run today out of a YMCA in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Very small staff there. You see 33 full-time staff who are essentially paid. They are volunteers, but they are paid through contributions. You know, so if you like Tor, you can contribute towards the program. You can also contribute to the program with your technical skills as well. So if you want to develop for Tor or if you want to help produce a new tool, something like that, then they are more than open-armed to welcome you. It was initially sponsored by the U.S. Office of Naval Research. And the idea of this, of course, is that if they had people in countries. They wanted to give them a voice. And of course, there was a potential military interest in this project as well. So in 2001-2002, of course, we had a whole change in the area. So this, the Electronic Frontier Foundation basically said, hey, we don't want anything to do with more with the military. This is a technology we want to actually keep, private. Now, obviously, this is one of the main founders of Tor. So Jacob basically was offered lots and lots of money, and he was actually approached by the National Security Agency and a bunch of Washington people. And basically, he was asked, you know, well, why don't you hand over the secrets? Can you please give us a back door so that we can essentially find the bad guys? And he says, look, no, that's not the principle of Tor. The principle of Tor is to keep things anonymous. And so far, they've been pretty much true to what they're saying. So how do we actually get up and running, and who's actually using Tor then? Well, actually over 60,000, actually it's more like 80,000 users a day now. There's approximately 3,700-ish routers in the world now. 6 million users worldwide. So this is a big, big project, as you can imagine. So every database, every website that you search or that you can't locate is essentially a dark web. So anything that's not searchable by Bing or by Google or by your favorite search engine is essentially classed as a dark web. So what that actually means is 90-something percent of web pages are actually in the dark web. So as you can imagine, if you were a government agency or a military organization, you're going to have content out there that you don't want searchable on the internet. So there are going to be pages that you don't want indexed. And again, you can see legitimate reasons for that. So are the media wrong when they say that the only way to access the dark web is through Tor? No. Of course, there's other ways to access the dark web. If you know a direct address to a web page, then you don't necessarily need to access it through Tor. But Tor essentially is a gateway into the dark web. And the question I ask is it all bad? Well, you know, it's like any technology. It can be used for good, and it can also be used for evil as well. So really, who uses it? Well, people like you and me, home users. Anybody who wants to send a secret communication or wants to ensure their privacy. General citizens who don't want to be monitored by law enforcement agencies. Activists. So I don't mean, you know, terrorists or bad guys. I mean, but activists who are really fighting for a noble cause, but they want to keep anonymous. They want to be able to communicate in an anonymous way. Whistleblowers as well. So obviously, unlike Ed Snowden, some whistleblowers want to remain anonymous. And this is an excellent channel for them to do that. There are other channels as well. WikiLeaks, of course, we all know what happened there. But there are other growing websites that do a similar thing. Journalists as well also use Tor. So, for example, journalists in Iran and in Syria and places like that. Of course, these are places where the press is severely restricted. So, again, this is a great way to get the story out to the public. And as I've said, the military and law enforcement organizations, government bodies, also use this technology as well. So how does the technology actually work? What do we actually mean when we talk about Tor? Well, you've probably heard this term, the onion router. So essentially, the onion router, think of it as an onion. So essentially, it's an anonymous communications technique, completely encrypted, and every single channel is protected by a unique digital certificate. So it uses TLS and AES level encryption. So essentially, every time it goes through a route, it essentially unwraps it sheds its skin, if you will. Now, the clever thing about this is that one route only knows about the next route. It can never go back to its original source, which is very, very clever. So each Runian router removes a layer of encryption, and then all it does is it's got follow-on instructions where to route that data. And again, this is just repeated over the network. And of course, all this is running under SSL transport layer security as well. Thus, we come up with this analogy of an onion. So this is pretty much what we mean. So you can see that we have different layers of the technology. So each layer only knows about the other layer. This is what makes it absolutely brilliant. Very, very difficult to break. So you can imagine, yes, you might be able to intercept the traffic, but you can essentially only go back to the previous node. This is what makes it so difficult for agencies to break. So when we talk about how it actually works here, we have Bob and Alice, of course, on either side of the internet here. So each onion router basically contains a TLS AES connection to every other onion router. So each onion router is also identifies itself by a temporary certificate. So these certificates only last a certain amount of time before they're discarded, typically around 10 minutes. Users can run the onion router. So basically what the first thing that they need to do is they need to find a list of address books. So where am I going to connect to? So they need to be able to establish a connection across the network. And the great thing about this technology is it changes every time. So you go and make a connection now using an onion router, and then you disconnect. You connect again, and you'll use a completely different route. So very, very clever. Basically, it uses TLS certificates, which sign the onion router's descriptor. This obviously contains a summary of addresses, where it's coming from, where it's going to, and ultimately how much bandwidth you can use. So you can actually control the bandwidth. And this is particularly useful if somebody was trying to do, let's say, a denial of service attack on a router. So basically here we have Alice, and Alice essentially opens up her onion router. She says, okay, I need to connect to the Tor network. So she opens up her browser, and the first thing she does is she needs to basically connect to Dave here. And Dave says, okay, can you provide me with a list of the onion clients that I can connect to? So once she's done that, she then establishes a connection through the internet. So this is an SSL connection using port 443, but it's a completely random path. Now the clever thing is, if she disconnects, or if she says, I would like a new identity, she can click on the new identity button, and immediately it will generate another path, another way. So again, very, very difficult to trace. Now, you're probably thinking here, okay, well, surely we can track this then. Surely we can track this, you know. So if I know somebody, the only way that realistically, the easiest way, is if you can get somebody at the entry node or if you can get somebody at the exit node. That's the easiest way, obviously. This is the mathematics behind it. So if you want a little bit of mathematics, what I'm going to do today, gentlemen and ladies, I've had three sessions this week, and I promise that if you sign up to my Twitter account, at Andy Malone, today I'm going to share all of my content on my SkyDrive, OneDrive, rather. Okay, so I'm going to create a folder. I'm going to put everything up there, my videos. I've got white papers. I've got really, really detailed white papers on Tor, the design, how it works, forensics, and so on. So I will make all of this content available to you later on. I just need to go and copy it and then share it out. So what we can see here is basically traffic flows in a series of what we call cells. So we have essentially a circuit identifier, or each cell has a circuit ID here. Obviously, what's the payload, what's the contents, and ultimately the actual data as well. So there are two types of these cells. So there's a control cell, so it determines who where they're going and who's going to receive them. And we also have relay cells as well. And the relay cells essentially control the end-to-end stream. So these relay cells contain the relay ID, an integrity checksum, and as you can see, the length of the actual payload and the actual relay command itself. So these are the actual commands. So when we talk about relaying the data, so relay data, so you basically send the command to, let's start flowing the data, open a stream, close a stream, relay teardown. So this, if there's a broken stream, or you suspect that somebody might be trying to attack you or attack that stream, one of the things that you can do is you can send a teardown command. Very interesting, by the way, is the congestion control. So one of the most common types of attacks on Tor is that you try and perform a denial of service attack. So the way around that is to actually control or manage the congestion control, which basically says if too much traffic is trying to flow here, then essentially just disconnect the channel. Okay. So the tool that I'm using today, of course, is the Tor onion router that we're going to use. So this essentially is the easiest way to access the content. So this obviously requires a client. Many sites in the dark web, or certainly the good ones, require kind of pre-registration. Now, obviously, the one thing about that is don't put your real name and your real email address. A, you could have a black van waiting outside for you one morning, or ultimately a black car with some Russian gentleman looking for money from you. And if there's any Russians in the room, you know, I love you guys. I just want to keep myself right here, okay. Okay, so obviously on the internet, we have a web address. So on the Onion network, we have an Onion URL, which is kind of randomly generated. So this is a 16-character auto-generated alphanumeric code. So it's basically hashed every time it's created, as you'll see. So these hashes are typically made up from letters and numbers, and they represent this 80-bit number here. So let's have a quick look at the Tor project, first of all, then. So what I've got here, first of all, this is the Tor project itself. So you can actually go ahead and download Tor. There are clients pretty much for every type of system, Windows, Linux, Mac, and so on. If you want full details on the Tor program and its technologies, these are the various projects here. And they're really, really helpful, by the way. Some of the people here, they're really open to questions, and there's a very, very large community of people. So if you want to ask questions, these people are really great. So these are the eight different programs that they currently have. You can see they also have a blog post area you can download, and also you can volunteer for the program as well. Okay, so that's essentially the program. So once you've installed the actual software, really, really simple to install. What it does, let's just have a quick look. I will just minimize that for a second. So what you get is you get this. This is what we call the Tor bundle, which contains a browser. And let's have a look at this. So within the browser, again, you've got a few bits and pieces in here. And if I just have a quick look at Tor here. So this is just basically the Tor program itself. Now, forensically speaking, this is actually quite interesting because it actually leaves very little residue on your system. So let's just... Okay, I'll tell you what, I'll maybe leave this section till we come to the forensics bit. Now, this is the control panel that it comes with, and you can see you can start, you can stop Tor, you can stop relaying. You can, at any point, you can generate a new identity for yourself. If I go into, you can see ultimately how much bandwidth you're currently using there as well. I can, if you want to, at the moment this is just really set up as an exit node, so if you want to actually be a relaying node, you can actually go in here and configure the various services to do that. So as I mentioned, really, really easy to download, very, very easy to configure. So, that's all good. We can download this stuff. It's really easy to access. Okay, anybody can download that software. But that's where, you know, it was a good idea. You know, yes, I can go in and I can access all this nice, fluffy, flowery stuff, and I can support my good causes. But when we talk about the dark net, when we talk about the dark web, well, of course, up top, everybody sails on the good ship Google. Sorry, Bing. So below the sea, of course, what we see is the deep dark web. And below there, obviously, this is where hackers lurk. So, you know, there's lots of websites on the internet where you can go and download bad tools and cracking tools and hacking tools. But if you want the really good stuff, this is essentially where you go. So I mean the really bad stuff, by the way, not the really good stuff. I shouldn't have said that. So up top, of course, you get regular porn. Down below, of course, you get the really dodgy porn. And I do mean really sick, nasty, horrible stuff. The stuff that you'll go to jail forever for, by the way. You can also see that a big submarine, the big submarine of the government sits here as well. Of course, they want to keep anonymous. Of course, every government wants to be anonymous. Again, there's also undetected areas of the Tor network as well. There's a lot of illegal content there. So what do we mean? What's inside the dark web? What do we actually mean by the dark web itself? So basically, it's an area of the internet, a dark area of the internet that's used for serious criminal activity, things like copyright infringement, credit card fraud, dealing with illegal drugs, guns. And of course, one of the nice things about the internet is that now you don't even need to transfer money anymore. Bitcoin has now become the currency of the dark web. It's rumored to contain more pages than the actual traditional internet itself. And they say that there's currently around 3.5 million deep websites, which approximately 30,000 of those alone are in Russia and some of its subsidiary states. Of course, as I mentioned, it's used by military and law organizations as well. So when we talk about the deep dark web, why is this such an interest for law enforcement? So, of course, it contains bad stuff, okay? So, illegal substances. So, you know, you've got drug dealers out on the street going, hey, this is great, I don't need to sell on the street anymore. I can just form a new website and I can sell here. Anonymous selling of weapons. So, as you can imagine, there's a lot of conflict in the world right now. There's a lot of embargoes, legal embargoes, where countries cannot purchase weapons. So how do they get around that? They get around that through technologies like this. Child pornography, slavery, people trafficking. There's a lot of really nasty dark stuff in here. Unauthorized leaks of sensitive information, money laundering, copyright infringement, and credit card fraud. All of these are typical actions of the dark web. Now, in the dark web, you know, when we talk about, okay, how will the content is actually classified, as you can imagine, it's not like Google. So if I go into Google and search for something, it's generally classified in an area. So here it's not. So you tend to find that the actual file document classifications are really quite dynamic. A lot of the pages are often unlinked. So you'll go into a website and every single page will go to a different site. Often with a very different IP address. Many of the sites, certainly many of the illegal sites, It's kind of membership only, so you need to join. Of course, don't use your real names, don't use your credit cards and so on. Be very careful how you sign up. A lot of it's contextual as well. So you can see that varied access pages. So you'll need one form of ID to get through one. You know, it's got different layers of access. So depending on who you are and what kind of access you've got, it depends what you get into. Limited access as well. So, for example, you'll need to put in a CAPTCHA to get through, or you'll need to put in an additional form of authentication to get through. Scripted. So, you know, you often think of the dark web as, you know, standard HTML type pages. Much of the content in the dark web is not kind of internet based. So a lot of it's through scripts or through command prompts, you know, in the old days. So very much non-HTML based. So how on earth, with all of this unindexed stuff, do we actually find something? So really what we need, search engines are no use. So probably we need an entry point. And the most famous entry point, I would say, is probably the hidden wiki. So the hidden wiki is essentially the bad guy's search engine, if you will. So wikis essentially provide entry points into the dark web. However, be very careful with this. Depending on where you are in the world, you could get locked up for 50 years here or get things chopped off, and, you know, we don't want that. So be very careful. Law enforcement, of course, can use the technology. They have a technology called Big Deep Web Planet. There is a set of intelligence tools there, which is based at the NSA, and also organizations like GCHQ have access to it. So let's look at the dark web then. So what I'm going to do here, I've actually started my browser here, and the first thing is you can see it tells me, congratulations, this browser is configured to use Tor. Now, the thing about this is there are so many attacks. Obviously, governments and people want to try and bring down Tor, so you often find that what would we attack? We would attack the web browser. So you need, first of all, to make sure that you've got the most up-to-date bundle. Okay, make sure that you've got the most up-to-date web browser, because otherwise you're potentially vulnerable. I can go in and I can search for items here as well, and you can also get help and things like that. I've got some interesting bookmarks here that I'll bring up. So the first one, of course, is the hidden wiki itself. And you can see that if you see the page that's opening up here, you can see that it's just a random address, and it's got a .onion address here. So that's, first of all, that's that very different type of address that we can search for. So what we've got here, this is the hidden wiki. And this, is, as I say, is one of the many wikis that will give us access into the deep dark web. So obviously here we've got the editor's picks. You can actually volunteer for various organizations, plunder other hidden services. Introduction points, obviously depending on what you're looking for. This is just like general kind of technology. Now, it's when we start going here that it starts getting interesting. So we've got things like financial services. So money laundering is often the name of the game here. So we can see that fake plastic, bitcoins, stolen PayPal accounts here, EasyCoin, you see some of these require actual logins. So PayPal coins, let me just zoom in here. So a lot of elite, this is very, very clever ways of illegally moving money. So, you know, if you want to change euros into dollars, but you don't want to go to your airport, then this is another way that you can do it. Okay, so that's all, you know, things like, there we go, cloning credit cards. So you can, they will sell you the equipment, in other words, to clone credit cards. We also have things like commercial services here. So, you know, you can find, you know, Apple Tor, PayPal. So PayPal, of course, is selling hacked PayPal accounts. So if you've had your PayPal account hacked, this is basically where they're going to get there. Fake passwords, fake passports for sale. Tel Aviv services. Interesting. So a lot of store, you know, if you want, that's an interesting one. UK guns and ammo. So if you want guns and ammo, okay. USA, EU, fake documents store. Hackintosh, Euro guns. Let me show you some of these. I heard a voice then saying, oh, yes, please. Let's see some of those, Andy. Okay. So I just kind of picked a few out at random. So this is one called Fish Squad. And it's okay. If you don't have a PayPal account, don't worry. You can actually buy one. And you can buy one in any currency. Okay? So these are all actually stolen. So obviously you just basically say, yeah, I want a PayPal account. Obviously the downside is you can only use it once before you're caught, but who cares, okay? So obviously you can go in and you can buy that. And of course you buy with bitcoins here. Other ones that I've got here, let's just have a quick look. So we have got counterfeit money. So if you want a free kebab, and you know the kebab seller won't check the money, then these are all very good. So Zero Squad, again, fake notes. So there you go. So for the value of 80 euro, it'll cost you 32. Sounds like a deal, doesn't it? Okay, sign up today. Then we've got more serious stuff. So this is essentially if you want to buy some weapons and guns. Again, buying weapons for Bitcoin, they guarantee basically shipping within 24 hours. Of course, we need logins. Okay. You know, I've just got this feeling when I get back to, you know, I'm going to the States next week, and I just have this awful feeling that somebody would have watched this presentation. And when I go through customs, they'll go, would you like to come this way, sir? Which never happened, honestly. So, yeah, buying army, fake passports. Okay, there's an enormous business in fake passports. Apparently, everybody wants to get into the UK. So, Calais is doing wonderful business, apparently supplying people with fake passports and fake IDs. So these guys will provide you, and they're actually very, very good copies, by the way. Really good copies. Not that I would know, of course, but... So let's do one more. I think I have one more interesting one here. Yeah. Now this was a creepy one actually. Check this one out. This is a little bit more sinister. You'll notice, by the way, one thing about the Onion router is that the pages load a lot slower than the regular internet because there's an awful lot of encryption going on. That's interesting. This one looks like it might have been taken down. Oh no, here we go. Yeah. How creepy is this? That is pretty creepy. Okay? Basically, a UK seller of vials, a few thousand vials of chloroform. That's creepy, isn't it? Please don't email the guy, all right? So if you want to, you know, I'm just worried about who might use something like that. But anyway, so you think that's as bad as it can get. Okay, unfortunately, that's not as bad as it can get on the dark side of the web. So that's just kind of some of the financial services, the commercial services. Other things that we've got here, you've got global guns. I love this one. Hire a hitman. Okay, you can actually hire a hitman if you're trying to get rid of somebody. How creepy is that? Okay. Marcus Murray did a session yesterday on how he could hack your website in a day. You know, pay these guys €100 and you'll hack it in 5 minutes. They'll do it for you. By the way, all the interesting stuff, by the way, that's the websites. The interesting stuff where all the activism or the hacktivism goes on is often through the forums. So, you know, you've heard of the 4chan chat rooms and things like that, synonymous with groups like Anonymous. Well, those groups have actually now moved to websites like this. Again, email messaging, so onion mail, completely secure email, political. So, again, assassination market. So if you don't like your politician, don't worry, we can get rid of him for you. I think because we got the no vote in Scotland, I think we've got rid of a few of them, actually. So apparently some of our leaders are now wearing concrete boots. Drugs, of course, if you want to do drugs, then it's drug heaven here. So you don't need to go to dealers on the street. You can just basically buy them here. So you can see this is a very, very frightening kind of area to get into. Now, obviously, you're curious. I'm curious. Let me just warn you. Be very careful on some of the things that you click on in here. All right? I would probably do it in a virtual machine. Very, very careful. All right? You have been warned. All right? So that's the dark web. It's pretty dark. It's pretty bad out there. There are other legitimate sites out there to help you hide your ass, as the organization says here. So, again, anonymous email, anonymous communications are very much in the forefront of things at the moment. So anonymous email, this of course is probably one of the most famous drug markets. Although it's been taken down, we're now I think onto Silk Road 4. I think that's the latest one. So these types of sites keep getting brought back. Unfortunately, sites like this are really nasty. So again, there's a nice light area of the web. You don't want to go to the Pirate Bay, so you think, hey, I can still go and get my movies and download my movies over the Tor network. But the downside of that is then you've got websites like this, and you can imagine if kids or somebody ran into this type of stuff, it's not good. Black market. So I mentioned there are a number of chat rooms, boards, and this is just really one of them, black market, where you can go in and you can basically bid, and it's the eBay for the bad guy, by the way. The Intel Exchange is an interesting site as well. So if you're a bit of a whistleblower, you've got something to say, you can go in here and spill the beans and make a little bit of money. So, or if you're a corporate insider and you've got the secrets of Windows 10 and you might want to just sell that and make a little bit of money, okay? That never happens, by the way. So that's pretty bad. Some of this content is quite nasty. And as you can imagine from a law enforcement perspective, what they're trying to do is obviously trying to get the bad guys. And in fact, we love it when the bad guys go onto the Tor network, because at least then they're focused and you can research and you can actually find out who they are and where they are. So let's talk about potential flaws in this technology. So one of the big flaws of this technology is the fact that it uses this multi-hopping technology, which essentially makes it slower. So if communication is slower, then there's a potential chance that you may be able to intercept that traffic. There's a confusion between being anonymous and whether the site is unlinkable. So just because it's not linkable, the site, doesn't necessarily mean it's actually anonymous. Now, one of the big flaws of Tor is that the Tor network itself has not been broken. I can tell you that. The actual technology itself has never been broken. What has been broken, though, or where the vulnerabilities do lie, are all the add-ons. So if you've got a browser and you've got nothing else and you're just browsing the network, fine. If you download something, if you download documents, if you get access to stuff, if you BitTorrent over Tor, that's the vulnerable areas. Yes, that's where we can trace the traffic. The darknet, as you can imagine, is also heavily monitored by law enforcement agencies. So as you can imagine, law enforcement agencies are basically putting together lots and lots of exit nodes. So they're actually installing tons of exit nodes and relay nodes in an attempt to actually catch your traffic, which, as I've just said there. There are also, as you can appreciate, many of the sites that I've just shown you, many of them may actually be honeypots in order to catch some bad guys. The actual child porn website that I showed you is a honeypot. Okay? So that was actually set up by GCHQ and MI5 in the UK to actually catch bad guys. And it's actually had a pretty good success at the moment. So some of the different types, so out of that then, out of those flaws, these are some of the potential vulnerabilities. So a timing attack. So the time between the data moves between the nodes, and also how long that node actually stays open. An entry monitoring. So if I know that you're a bad guy, and I'm not pointing at you for any reason, sir, but if I knew that you were a bad guy, obviously, one of the things I would want to do is I would want to monitor that particular node. Likewise, an exit node as well. So if I suspect that you're downloading illicit content, it's something that I would want to do. I would definitely want to monitor the exit node. Denial of service attack, as I mentioned, the DDoS attack, the predecessor, so a replay attack, exit node stiffing, these are all known types of attacks here. So the timing analysis, as I said, this is where the adversary essentially determines whether a node is essentially transmitting or not. So if the node is actually transmitting, it will then try and hook on what messages are actually being said. So this is potentially vulnerable to this type of attack, of course. So the node can defeat this. So you'll remember when I talked about the different types of Tor messages, the onion router messages. So one of those messages at the bottom was, I can send dummy messages. So it basically tricks it into believing that it's a real message, but it's actually not. Entry node sniffing, of course, is where law enforcement suspect that you're pretty much a bad guy. Of course, you know, if you're a criminal organization, you know, we've maybe monitored your phone, we've maybe monitored your PCs. We know that you're using illegal content. You've maybe got keyloggers installed on your system. Of course, we then start to monitor what you're actually doing on that. So entry node sniffing. Now you'll notice in the slide, by the way, that everything in blue is running over SSL. Everything in red is not. Everything in red is essentially open channel. So thus, it's potentially vulnerable here. So likewise, exit node sniffing here, you can see that we have somebody on the other end listening to what's coming out. Intersection attacks. Okay, so this is essentially what GCHQ and the likes of the National Security Agency in the USA and the FBI are essentially trying to do. They're trying to put in relay onion routers that are essentially have got malware in them, so they can basically find out who the source is. And again, this is, again, they've had kind of limited success with this. But the advantage of that, of course, is you can do a network analysis on the traffic. So that's essentially what they're trying to do. So compromise notes, the thing about a compromise note, so going back to that slide there, so if that node had been compromised, one of the things about that node is it can essentially retain the information something like 10 minutes. So it holds on to that information before it retransmits it on. And it's in that time period that you could potentially do an analysis on the traffic. Okay, so obviously, if we can get a traffic analysis on that, then you've got a greater chance of actually getting a result. So, of course, the denial of service attack, like any website, of course, you know, denial of service attacks go to the very, very core of networking, and they're very, very difficult to stop, unless you've got big scale out there. Let me just kill this. Sorry, I thought I actually switched that off earlier. I am not online. Thank you very much. Okay. Okay, so Tor deals with these, so you can basically limit the bandwidth. So as I mentioned, you can essentially control the bandwidth. Now, apart from the fact that it's actually using TLS, Transport Layer Security, so it's encrypting the channels, you can actually restrict the amount of bandwidth that it's actually using, thus countermanding that type of attack. But obviously the other side of Tor is that it's really quite important for law enforcement. You know, so I've showed you one side of Tor. We've talked about what Tor is. We've talked about, you know, why have it. I've talked about the technology behind Tor. I've talked about the fact that it can be used, like many technologies, for bad things. But the actual technology, how do you stop it? Okay, so in this section, we're going to talk about how we can actually stop it. So security agencies are actually using this technology in order to try and track the bad guys. And how they do that, obviously, forensically speaking, there's been a number of investigations. So just looking at an average machine, an average version of Windows here, so if you did a forensic analysis on a user's machine, one of the things that we've discovered, yes, we can see where Tor is actually installed, we can see its fingerprint, where it's, you know, what type of bundle it is. It might have an icon, it might have a couple of registry entries, but the actual content, the searches that the user are using, is deleted. Nothing is retained. So the Windows thumbnail cache. So you think, okay, well, you know, the user's going to go in, they're going to use a browser, there's going to be thumbnails of pictures and graphics. Again, the only graphics that were found after a forensic analysis were just the icons. The other thing then, of course, the paging file. So then you think, okay, well, let's do a memory analysis. Let's have a look at the paging file. But yet again, we looked at the paging file and we actually discovered that there was nothing there other than the actual application was actually installed and configured. So they're keeping this very, very secure, very, very well controlled. The other thing there, of course, is then you think, okay, what about the NT user? So the actual ntuser.dat file, surely that's got to contain something. Again, yeah, it just shows that the actual user has installed Tor, but it doesn't, again, show any content. So it's well hidden. Now, saying that, you're probably thinking, well, you know, that's not very useful. How on earth do we track this down? How do we make this better? So from a forensic perspective, if I just did a network analysis using a regular piece of software like this, I mentioned that Tor transmits over port 443. But some more recent technologies actually show us. So this one is CapLoader. So this is a free product. There's actually two versions of it, CapLoader, and there's a professional edition of this. But you can see here that, yes, it's coming over port 443, but it's actually identified that it's actually Tor traffic. So that it's actually doing an analysis of the traffic here. Okay? So the truth is actually revealed. So what else can I then do to block Tor on your network? So many of us here are administrators. Many of us here are security professionals. And one of the first things that we're going to want to do, certainly in a college or a university or a school, you're going to want to protect your people. And the way that we can protect our people is by blocking this technology. So you can actually Tor themselves actually help you with this. So if you actually go to the Tor website there, you can actually get a list of the Tor servers, so the current servers, the current nodes at the moment. Now, you know, if you've got a regular Joe Soap firewall, one of the things you might do is, okay, I'll get a list of those IP addresses, and I'll basically just create a rule and drop all those IP addresses in and do that manually. And you can do that. Absolutely, you can do that. You may want to create a little script. This slide shows you how to do the script, which will automate that process. Okay? And you can see that if the user tries to use Tor, they'll get that little fateful message there. The other way around, of course, is that the next generation of firewalls are now becoming application aware. Okay? So you, as I mentioned, when you fire up Tor, it actually uses high address ranges, network address ranges. So one of the things you probably want to do is stop that there. What you need is an application-aware firewall. And let me give you an example of one of those. So what I'm going to do here is I'm just going to run this little application. This is Checkpoint Firewall, of course. And I'm just bringing just the demo version. I'm just going into the actual firewall itself. And up top, we can see, I'm going to click into policy, and you've got your regular kind of firewall policies here. And up here, though, we've got this new one. We've got applications and URL filtering. So if I go into policies, I'm going to just right-click, and I'm actually going to say, hey, I want to create a new user access rule, and I'm just going to call this Tor. And I'm just going to say this is for any network, or is it just a specific network? This is for everything. So what I'm going to then do is I'm going to say, okay, now that I've done that, I want to basically filter out specific types, not just network, but I want to filter out applications as well. So again, I'm doing a search here for Tor. So there's quite a few that contain the word Tor. So I'm just going to scroll down, and you can see here that here it is. So Tor network. And it shows you that it's a severe category. So this is a category 5, which means it's potentially severe. But there could also be legal implications of having this type of traffic on your network. Now, the other thing that this potential firewall does as well is it also, you can bring in things like anonymous sites, so other anonymous technologies, things like anonymous or proxies, you know, that maybe want to hide things. So you can see from anything from anonymizer here, anonymous, you know, so it's not just the applications, but it's also websites as well. So anything that's trying to actually hide you. So there we go. You can see, as I said, the next generation of firewall and checkpoint, this is just an example of one that's out there. There's a few out there. So I showed you two examples. One example is where you can manually do this with your regular firewall. You can get a list of the nodes, and you can basically create a rule that does it. The other one is where you can actually use a paid product. Okay? Now, personally, I'm from Scotland. I don't pay for anything, so I like the free stuff. Okay? Okay, so another interesting development. So this is nothing really to do with Tor, but from a forensics perspective, this is something called web browser fingerprinting. So this is really quite a new concept. It's been out for a few years, which basically stipulates that every single one of us is absolutely unique. We're all unique. So although we might use exactly the same machine, with exactly the same software, with exactly the same web browser, our browsing habits and our browsing history is going to be completely unique to us. And I'm sure you go, yeah, okay, that's a reasonable reasonable idea. Okay? So basically, the idea is now that this the Electronic Foundation, Frontier Foundation, this is one of their latest projects. And they've actually come up where they can actually prove that it's you that was actually on that machine, up to 94% accuracy. Okay, that's pretty good. Okay? So just because of your browsing habits. So the clever thing is, even in privacy mode, you know, so if you want to switch on, you know, the privacy or the porn filter, whatever you want to call it, you know, that you can still find it. So what it does come up with, though, it produces a really clever report. So it comes up with things like the operating system, the language, the version, the fonts that you use, the links that you choose, the time in, the time out, and so on. So in other words, it's more of the metadata, but it's very, very accurate. So the information is collected. It's not limited to, though, browser-supported items. So what are the plugins that you're using? The geographical information, things like IP addresses, what's, you know, especially on mobile devices, where are you in the world? So were you at a particular scene of the crime at a particular day or time? Device-related information, operating system information. So we can actually find out that it's your operating system, and you go, oh, no, that could be anybody's operating system. Yeah, but with your product key? Okay. So absolutely unique. It gives it a unique fingerprint. So you might want to try out this website, Panopticlick. Okay, this is a free tool, and you can go there today. Just try yourself. You will get your own unique fingerprint. So this is just, I just did this a couple of days ago. This is a regular IE11 web browser, and you can see that this particular browser, my browser, is unique to be among 4,120,649 tested so far. So if I try in privacy mode, look at the difference from 4 million down to 1.941 million. Okay, so you can see that it's good, but that's still quite largely ununique. If I use an older version of Tor, it's pretty much the same as a regular browser in privacy mode. That's the crazy thing about this. So if you're using an older version of Tor, you're no more secure than in a privacy mode. But if you have an updated version of Tor, look at the difference. So this is only unique within 647,000. So from 11 million down to 647,000. That goes to show you how privacy is being maintained through Tor. So again, have a look at that, Panopticlick. Okay. Incidentally, all my slides are going to be available. I've put loads of notes and things on the slides as well, so you can take those away with you. Okay, so that's essentially that. What about some other privacy solutions? So I want to be privacy. I want to have privacy, Andy. We all have the right to be private. So what are some of the other privacy options available to me? Well, as I mentioned, you could use anonymous proxy servers. Okay, so essentially the aim of an anonymous proxy is essentially it hides your IP address in one form or another. So essentially, it's all about redirecting. Now, essentially, one of the main reasons that people use this technology is so that you can watch free TV in a different country or your non-home country. So it basically goes to the proxy first. So this is if you want to send data, email, browsing, and so on. So in each case, in all cases, in fact, the data is actually hidden. So there are a number of different types of proxies. So a basic anonymous proxy, a lot of these are actually free. You can purchase, you can download these. It's often freeware. But the key thing about this is it actually identifies itself. It says, I am an anonymous proxy. Okay? There's also something called a distorting proxy. So this is basically where, if I try to do a trace route, or if I try to find out your IP addresses, it will actually distort me and give irregular information. And then, of course, you've also got things like a high anonymity proxy. Okay, this does not identify itself. So you often find that, for example, military organizations might use this, or real bad guys might use this type of technology. Okay, very, very difficult to track. There are many, many web-based services out there that you can actually use if you want to. So, you know, you can download the proxy technology yourself, or you can just simply just use some of the various websites. So this is just some of the websites that I found. So we've got hideme.be. So basically, if I wanted to get to a website that's not available, I could just put in the website here and it will just proxy me off for that. Anonymous, of course, is one of the most famous ones. Again, if you wanted to download your favorite software but didn't want to pay for it, you could use that. Free proxies, again, there's a whole bunch of them. And again, you can, say exactly, some of them, though, you need to register. Some of these are private, obviously, and they're memberships. Again, this is another one. This is a list of all the proxies within the EU, although you notice some of them are in Ukraine, some of them are in China. You maybe want to think twice about that. So what we spoke about there, we spoke about some of the additional kind of technologies to help you be or remain anonymous. And on the other hand, I've also showed you as professionals on how you can block those networks, those types of technologies on your network. Okay? So again, I'm not for or against here. I'm showing you both sides of the coin. Okay? I'm letting you draw your own conclusions. How do you know that the NSA or law enforcement are a bad guy in that matter of fact, are not in my network? They're not messing around with my software. This is an interesting website, by the way. This is called Fingerprints. So essentially, secure browsing connections can be interrupted. So essentially, it takes the unique hash value or the correct hash value, what there should be, and you can then compare your hash value with what's there. So if your hash value is different, you know that somebody's playing around on your network. So that's really nice technology. I mentioned WikiLeaks earlier. So again, if you want to be a whistleblower, but don't want to find yourself in Guantanamo Bay, then you might want to visit this website. This is GlobalLeaks. Another one is the Invisible Internet Project. So this is kind of the subsidiary, if you will, or a counterpartner of the Tor network. This is L2P. HTTPS Everywhere, this was a Chrome-based initiative, which basically allows you to have HTTPS on every single website. And again, this is all open source technology. Since the Snowden cases, what we've actually found is that people want free communications, but they don't want all the advertising junk that comes with it. And in the last couple of years, there's definitely been a little bit of a backlash to the likes of Facebook and some of the other sites for the heavy use of advertising. So technologies like Telegram, for example, allow you to do anonymous text messaging. Things like Hello, of course, is now popping up, and it's actually being extremely successful, and they guarantee that your data will not be passed on, it will not be sold. And again, I always have to question, though, this sounds like a great idea, and it all sounds very, very noble, but you have to wonder, how long is it going to be that way for? So again, the same story comes across, be careful what you share. Again, it's not just software either, it's actually technology. So this is a technology called SafePlug. This is something that you can actually plug in directly to your router at home. And essentially, every piece of traffic goes out. It's anonymized. This is a really interesting one as well. So if I'm listening on your network, and doing some application analysis on your network, it won't even pick it up, the fact that it's actually Tor. It actually just sees it as Skype traffic. So this used to be a technology called Skype Morph. This is called Code Talker Tunnel that you can get. And again, this is both a software and a hardware-based technology, but it's very interesting. So essentially, this is a protocol camouflaging tool. So it camouflages the traffic, as I say, as Skype. Again, I'm going to put in a white paper because I thought this was great for research. So I'm going to put a load of white papers and stuff in there. So if you are going to use this technology, if you are going to use Tor, then of course don't use browser widgets. Don't torrent over Tor because they'll get you. Because remember, torrent traffic just pops up leaps and bounds. Use the most up-to-date Tor browser. Always use HTTPS. And one great thing that's come out of Snowden is the fact that many websites, both Microsoft, Google, all the big boys, they're now doing it right. They're now doing it through HTTPS. So they are ensuring your privacy. And as I said yesterday in my cloud session, you know, we were talking about the technologies like Office 365 and Windows Azure, and we're all saying, well, how do I know that Microsoft's keeping my stuff secure when I see headlines like Microsoft ordered to hand over data from Irish data center to the National Security Agency? Actually, in fact, Microsoft haven't handed that data over. They're still going through the courts, so you've got to take your hat off for that. Definitely never open documents downloaded through Tor. Open them once they're downloaded and once you're offline. Yes? And then use bridging or find a company to do that. So we spoke about what is Tor and how does it keep you anonymous. We've spoke about who uses it, what is the dark web and how it works. We've spoke about what are the potential flaws. And we've also looked at it from a forensics environment. And we've looked at the technology. Oh, by the way, did I mention that I've written a book? Now, there is a question coming. And the question, if Mark Rusinovich can get away with it, then so can I. Here is the trailer for my book, With No Mr. Voiceover Man. Yes? So the seventh day, available now. Thank you very much. Thank you. Okay, so I did promise a winner. So I'm going to pick somebody random from this section who comes up to me with a bookmark who knows the name of the main character. Who? Doogie Allen. Yes, you do. That's him. There you go. Give the man a round of applause.
Thanks a lot.
I've signed it. Okay, as I mentioned, folks, what I'm going to do is I like to give love. So I'm going to pack it. There's going to be white papers, videos, documents, all kind of stuff. All you need to do, of course, is just give me some evaluation. If you've enjoyed it, by the way, my name is Andy Malone. If you haven't, it's Thomas Lee. Okay? Thank you very much, okay? Thanks.